From Uniontown to Philadelphia, Harrisburg to Indiana, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Josh Shapiro is once again proposing to spend hundreds of millions more on K-12 education. But is our already hefty spending on education producing results? David Taylor is here to host a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And they call themselves Fair Districts PA, but they really are trying to cement in place the state's highly gerrymandered congressional and legislative district maps. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Let's start out with the good news. Southwestern Pennsylvania school teacher Mark Fogel was released from a Russian prison this past week after having been held for 3.5 years for possessing medical marijuana. Fogel was not included in the last prisoner swap engineered by the Biden administration, but the new Trump administration made Fogel's release a priority, sending President Trump's Mideast envoy, Steve Witkoff, to negotiate the teacher's return. Witkoff secured Fogel's release, who returned to a White House welcome that included President Trump, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Witkoff, and other top government officials. Of course, the biggest welcome home came when Fogel was finally reunited with his family. Governor Josh Shapiro has proposed closing the Rockview State Prison and the Kahana Boot Camp in an effort to downsize the state's correction system. The long-term trend is for a continued decline in the prison population, making the scale back necessary. Both facilities are located in central Pennsylvania. The labor union representing workers at those prisons has vowed to fight the closure. Shapiro said employees at those facilities will be offered comparable jobs elsewhere. Pittsburgh Mayor Ed Gainey is apparently in for a fight if he wants to keep his job. Challenger Corey O'Connor, who currently serves as Allegheny County Comptroller, raised almost $485,000 in the month of January alone, compared to the $24,000 raised by the incumbent. The race, once again, is a contest between the Pittsburgh Democratic Party's progressive wing, represented by Gainey, and O'Connor, who is garnering support of the more traditional Democrats. The contest will be decided in the May primary. Pennsylvania Republicans have a new leader. State Senator Greg Rothman was elected the new party chairman during the GOP's recent winter meeting. Rothman held off a challenge by Allentown businessman Bill Brockenberg en route to securing the party's top spot. Rothman succeeds longtime chairman Lawrence Tabus, who did not seek re-election. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. In his recent budget address, Governor Josh Shapiro called for spending hundreds of millions more dollars on K-12 education in government schools, but not spending more to give parents and students more school choice options. Here for a roundtable discussion is our Capital Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation and by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. David.
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me on the program, your Capital Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be here again, David. Thank you.
And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, David. I'm happy to be here with you.
We're living in fascinating times, as we previewed a little bit on the last program, that His Excellency the Governor Josh Shapiro went before the General Assembly and put forward his proposed budget for 2025-26. It was a 90-minute avalanche of minutiae, and that none of it actually spoke to the big picture, which is that we don't have the money for any of this. And so the governor is proposing a big spending increase. He is coming up with it's based on revenue sources that may not come through, and it also plans on spending down the remaining reserves and digging in to the rainy day fund and spending that down too. That's just complete. It's just wildly irresponsible, unsustainable, and as such, I don't think it can even be used as a starting point.
It's a $50 billion proposal, roughly, and its underpinnings, its structure is built around taxes or other revenues that don't have a source. Things like a tax on games of skill, which has never been enacted into law in Pennsylvania. It could be, but it isn't right now. Things like revenue from adult use cannabis doesn't exist.
Mass commercializing recreational marijuana.
Hasn't been enacted into law, and they're building the budget around imaginary sources like this. That it's a castle of sand or whatever type of analogy you want to use. There's no actual physical calculable underpinning for the spending.
Right. Yeah. I had the same thought. And to take it a step further, it was almost like a checklist of policy initiatives, like taking those sort of things that you talked about, Steve, like the recreational marijuana check, the games of skill check, the minimum wage increase check, sort of things that he wanted to check off his list, but no underpinning of like an overall plan for how to improve the state, how to close the budget deficit, how to grow the economy. It was sort of a checklist of pet projects.
So he'll be able to say on each of those points, well, I'm for this.
Yeah, right.
Without actually engaging in any of the policy work. And Rebecca, you were sharing the reality check that the Independent Fiscal Office was giving on this proposal. If it were enacted as the governor proposed, that we would be facing, you know, multi-billion dollar shortfalls in just a few more years.
Yeah, the Independent Fiscal Office took a look at what the governor was proposing, and just baseline, we're looking at deficits in the out years, but with the proposed initiatives that he has, regulating skill games, and with the new programs that he's proposing, just next year alone, we'd be looking at almost a $5 billion deficit. And beyond that, continued deficits, it looks like at almost $3 billion the following year, and $2 billion after that. So deficits down the road, assuming nothing else changes, if his policies were to get enacted.
And so it just, again, I don't, sometimes I'm concerned that I'm too cynical, but it really does seem as though the governor isn't planning on being here 4 years from now.
Well, it's an interesting thought that you have there, David. He may have some other ambitions. I don't know. I wouldn't know the answer to that, but I can tell you what will happen in a couple more years based on what Rebecca just shared and what the fiscal office is saying. If this budget is enacted, families are certainly going to be paying for it. Roughly $1,900 per family of four. That much of a tax increase to get out from under these deficits that the governor is walking us right into and asking the General Assembly to support him in.
We have a structural deficit. What does that mean? What it means is that mandatory spending is increasing faster than growth in revenue to the Commonwealth from the growth of the economy. The mandatory spending is spending on social programs. Pennsylvania has a demographic crisis. We have a large and growing population of senior citizens who are beyond their working years, and not enough younger people in their working years to pay the taxes to sustain government at its current scale. So when you're in that dynamic, the last thing that you would want to do would be to press down the pedal on spending to make your bad situation worse. And yet that, as far as I can tell, that's exactly what the governor is proposing. And I just got to say one more thing. So in the course of the governor's budget address, he essentially called the business community tax cheats. And that's not at all appreciated. And also it's completely untrue, but it's an excuse to march out one of the oldest, stalest, most preposterous policy ideas, which is mandatory unitary combined reporting. And this is something that Tom Wolf brought up when he was Secretary of Revenue for Ed Rendell. And so we're talking like 20 years ago. It was a bad idea then, and it's every bit as bad now, which is to give the State Department of Revenue the powers of the IRS for the purpose of imposing Pennsylvania business tax liability on a company's operation in other states. So that's another one of these imaginary revenue sources that the governor has put forward. And I guess the durability of this combined reporting thing is just that like people have it in their heads that there's this pot of leprechaun gold just waiting to be claimed and spent, and you get credit for spending it. And like people are so in love with that idea, they don't look at the facts, which is it's impossible. The juice is not worth the squeeze. And moreover, we already addressed this by giving the Secretary of Revenue enhanced powers to disallow deductions that the department believes are not legitimate. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. So, so the governor had his say, but fortunately that's the first word, not the last word. And so that will, light the fuse on a months-long process of hearings by the Appropriations Committee, reviewing all the different parts of this spending plan and basically looking through every single department of state government. I would hope that spirit of DOGE that we see with Elon Musk in Washington with the Department of Government Efficiency, that would be a great time to bring that spirit to Harrisburg, because in particular with the spending on public K-12 education, Pennsylvania is one of the top spenders in the country. We have a system that too often delivers a product that's mediocre at best, and at a time when our student population is shrinking in absolute numbers, the idea that it should become exponentially more expensive, it doesn't pass the straight face test.
And the problem is you're looking at a system that right now Pennsylvania is one of the leading states in terms of spending on public education. We're spending just a few dollars shy of $22,000 per student per year. And are we getting stellar results? Are we maybe the seventh most successful purveyor of public schools in the country? Are we like the state that everyone wants to be like? No, because our system is failing. We just saw the issue in the last several weeks of the report card on education. That is a national nonpartisan research project that they dig into performance of students.
Yes.
And Pennsylvania is actually doing terrible. We have multiple schools where no one is proficient in the core skills.
Not one student.
And that's $22,000 a year that's getting you that kind of quality. There's something is drastically off, and it's not a money problem. It's a problem of tailoring the education to a system that families can actually utilize for their kids and that their kids can thrive in.
Well, and it's also about rigor, and I think it's also about accountability. That you have these schools that are just failure factories, and that while there may be a student population at that school that has particular needs or challenges, kids' needs are not being met, and as a result, everybody's just sleepwalking, and you get social promotion. You have kids who are far below proficient in reading and in math, and obviously, especially with reading, that goes to comprehension and the understanding of anything else. And the concept that we would allow these kinds of failures to continue, it's completely unacceptable to me.
Another area that's frightening is the governor's talking about bailing out public transit systems around the state. And that includes SEPTA, which is the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority. It's deeply in trouble. It's not functioning well. It's running routes of trains and buses that are often empty or near empty, and its utilization never bounced back after the pandemic. So the system itself is a legacy system that is not being fully used, but it's costing additional millions and millions of dollars in requirements for its spending and support. So the governor's talking about bailing out SEPTA, when in fact the answer for SEPTA is to cut routes and put them on the path toward being like other states, where the actual riders are paying for their own ride instead of trying to expect that folks out in the rural area should be paying for their ride. It's just a strange disconnect where Pennsylvania is a low quality state in terms of actually requiring those who use the system to pay for it.
Yeah, Steve's exactly right on the SEPTA, the public transit issue. And I don't think anyone's questioning that public transit is necessary in the state transportation system. A lot of people do depend on it. But the governor made this even worse last year when he talks about flexing money that was assigned to road and bridge projects, $153 million, which he used, which was already dedicated to road and bridge projects around the state. He used it for SEPTA last year. So you're able to do that under federal regulations with regard to, you know, transportation funding. But that starts out this budget year for PennDOT in the red. So we already have to make up that $153 million that was brought over from the previous budget year in the red for road and bridge funding. So there's no new road and bridge funding that's proposed in the governor's budget, but there is new transit funding, like Steve is saying. So we're already in the hole for road and bridge funding. And the legislature, I guess, has to figure out a solution for that.
I want to believe that the critical analysis that we see coming from Elon Musk and his team in Washington being applied to the federal government, these are things that can be done at the state and municipal level. And a complicated system like SEPTA, I think, would be a great subject for exactly that kind of analysis, to track usage, to follow where utilization is high and where it has fallen back, and to, you know, to do a comprehensive review of the physical system of their infrastructure and their, you know, rail cars, subway cars, all those things, and to put together a plan, a smart plan, for how do we optimize conditions, use the resources that we have, right-size fares for the strap hangers, and in that way, this is how you build a sustainable system rather than just chucking, you know, good money after bad.
Well, I think what you're talking about is a third-party review. I think that's what is the most appropriate course of action here, because I think the SEPTA, the transit systems, have done reviews like that in the past and have attempted to reset and right set things. And I think what's absolutely necessary at this point is a third party review of that type of system, because what you're outlining is exactly what should be done. And I think it takes a third party to do that.
And one that has the proper authority to envision completely reinventing the system, because, I mean, SEPTA's been in position since the 70s or 80s, I think. So, again, without an updated strategic vision and an updated analysis of actual, you know, like customer passenger usage, that we're just going to continue with this very expensive boondoggle. So what else do you guys take away from what the governor put forward?
Well, one of the things is that the governor still seems to be more intent on doing things that are good for show,
mm-hmm.
photo ops,
mm-hmm.
An opportunity to get out and barnstorm around the state and talk about something with potential voters, citizens, potential voters.
Mm-hmm.
And he's good at doing that. Like,
a lot of glad handing.
He's uh-huh. putting a lot of energy into that.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about getting a lot of stuff done
mm-hmm.
while he's doing that. But what we continue to see is a lack of legislative productivity. It's one thing to talk about it, being a governor who gets things done. But it's not so easy to reconcile with the reality that this governor's not getting much done.
And I agree. I think it's going to take him rolling up his sleeves and really getting into – we know the House is going to continue to have a slight Democrat majority. The Senate is a Republican majority, and it's going to take him rolling up his sleeves and really working out some deals and getting some things done, working with legislators. And that takes some leadership, and that's what we'll have to see, I think.
Yeah, and the expenditure of political capital,
right.
and putting yourself at least to some degree – you know, at risk. That, but that's what leaders do. So, It promises to be a very interesting budget season. And, of course, this is a marathon, not a sprint, going all the way through to the end of the process, hopefully at the constitutional deadline of June 30. But as always, time will tell. So as we're winding down on this week's program, let's just go around here. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and the things that you're doing?
They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org on the internet.
Wonderful. And Rebecca, where can people learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at PMTA.org.
Excellent. And as always, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. So thanks to all of you for listening. Steve, Rebecca, and I will be back next time, and you can tune in, catch us here on Capital Watch. And now a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. To paraphrase Ronald Reagan, there they go again. In the years leading up to the redrawing of the congressional and state legislative maps following the 2020 census, the deceptively named activist group Fair Districts PA railed against the drawing of district lines to favor one political party over the other and served up a host of harebrained solutions to the perceived problem. To be clear, the goal of Fair Districts PA has never been, nor is it now, about creating fair districts. It is all about changing the rules and tilting the playing field to give Democrats an electoral advantage. They were spectacularly successful gerrymandering both the congressional district map and the legislative district maps after the 2020 census. Pennsylvania's activist state Supreme Court trampled the state constitution, seizing control of the congressional district map drawing process from the legislature and placing it in the hands of a left-wing college professor from California. The ploy succeeded, giving Democrats more seats in Penn's Woods than merited, until last November's Donald Trump-generated red wave resulted in Republicans flipping two Democrat seats and restoring representative balance. While the state Supreme Court was doing its part to ensure the success of the gerrymander conspiracy, legislative redistricting was being done by the Legislative Reapportionment Commission. Article 2, Section 17 of the Pennsylvania Constitution empowers the commission, which is always composed of one Republican and one Democrat member from the state House and the state Senate, with a fifth member of the commission appointed by the governor, thus advantaging the party that holds that office. Governor Tom Wolf appointed Mark A. Nordenberg, Chancellor Emeritus at the University of Pittsburgh, as chairman of the commission. Nordenberg then proceeded to deliver a set of legislative maps that would have made Elbridge Gerry proud. A colonial-era governor of Massachusetts, Elbridge Gerry was made famous for designing a congressional district resembling a salamander, hence the term gerrymander. In the process, Nordenberg violated every rule of district drawing. He sliced and diced municipalities, crossed geographic boundaries such as rivers and mountains, and disregarded socioeconomic regions. As a result, in 2022, when elections were first held using the new district lines, Democrats ousted Republicans from control in the state House, but by only one seat. Leading up to the 2020 redistricting process, Fair Districts PA piously argued that each party's representation in the legislature should reflect the statewide vote for seats in that body. Results of the 2024 state House election show that by that metric, the GOP should be in a five-seat majority. Instead, Democrats continue to cling to a one-seat majority. The next round of redistricting is several years away. It will occur after the 2030 federal census. But Fair Districts PA is already at work trying to subvert the system and once again hijack the process. They continue to employ the left-wing tactic of claiming to be against exactly what it is they want to accomplish. Having been founded by a coalition of organizations that occupy the far left of the state's political spectrum, including Common Cause, the League of Women Voters, and the Committee of 70, their true motives are not hard to discern. They are pushing for what they term an independent redistricting commission. Again, this follows the left-wing playbook of giving legislation a nice-sounding name that is the opposite of what it seeks to achieve, such as was done with the Affordable Care Act and the Inflation Reduction Act. The theory is to impanel a commission of ordinary citizens who will create maps without regard to political considerations. They are more likely to find a field of purple squirrels cavorting with star-spangled unicorns than come up with any such group. But that is not the goal. The goal is to impanel a commission more easily controlled by the left so they can cement in place the gains made under the current gerrymander. With a new session of the General Assembly now underway, legislation to change the process is being reintroduced. Fortunately, such a change would require an amendment to the state constitution. That is a long and difficult process, which, given the current political divisions in the state legislature, is highly unlikely to succeed. There is no perfect process, but the current process has withstood the test of time. That being said, lawmakers and voters need to remain vigilant because there is always a Trojan horse, like Fair Districts PA, at the gates. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. It is time, once again, to talk about the annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier gathering of conservative activists each year here in the Keystone State. This year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be held April 3rd through 5th at the Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. The featured dinner speaker will be Kayleigh McEnany, who served as Donald Trump's first White House press secretary and currently is co-host of Outnumbered on the Fox News Channel. The conference will include speeches, panel presentations, workshops, and social events. Complete information and registration for the conservative event of the year, the 2025 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, can be found at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.